This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast of Critical Hit, a gaming show by gamers for gamers on Joy 94.9. Wow, Kev, I can't believe you found the boss key.
I know, and I couldn't have done it without you, Luke.
You're listening to Critical Hit, Joy's only video game show.
It's by gamers, for gamers.
Yes, you are here on Critical Hit. It's a lovely Saturday afternoon here in Melbourne.
It is absolutely beautiful.
It's warm,
today.
It's sunny, it's lovely, and we're hiding inside.
Yes,
in a dark gamers. Studio.
Yes, as a gamer should be.
Yes, yeah. We're sitting here with our pale skin and we're hissing at people as they walk past the studio. Get out. this is Critical Hit. I'm Luke. I'm joined today by Archer.
Yes,
Meeks.
I'm not sick again.
Not sick again.
I know.
You were sick last week.
I was sick. It was sad.
So we talked about things in your honour last week.
Yay.
We just, you know, when we talked about Kickstarter, I made sure that I like bagged it a bit for you.
Oh, that's good.
You know, things
especially
like that.
With the news that came out this week with Kickstarter.
Yes,
we'll
exactly.
We'll get to that later.
Yes, we will. And Meeks is here as well.
I am indeed here.
You are. And also joined by Tom.
Ahoy, ahoy.
Having been you for a while as well. You've been battling things with your throat.
Yes, well, enough about my weekends.
Wow.
Tonsillitis, people. Tonsillitis. Nothing sus. It wouldn't be sus here on Critical Hit. We wouldn't do that to you. Now, a bit of a jam-packed show today. A few things we're going to talk about. So later on in the show, our main topic this week is open or public beta testing.
Beta.
Public beta testing. I knew that would happen. I'd say it wrong.
Alpha beta.
Thank
beta.
You. So we're talking about beta testing, and we've all played a lot of beta tests over the last couple of years, you know, games that have come out, and usually online multiplayer-focused games have been the main ones, and, you know, a question was raised last year by you, Meeks, actually. You sort of brought it up initially, and you said, beta testing, I wonder if it's maybe not so much about the testing and a bit about just the hype and the marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to be talking about that later in the show. We're talking about some of the beta tests that have happened, what we've thought of them, and whether we think it actually is a bit of a ploy or if it actually is genuinely testing out things as well. So also later in the show, a couple of reviews. First reviews of the year, actually. I'll be reviewing Resident Evil Zero. That's the HD remake that's just come out recently. And also really interesting puzzle game from Jonathan Blow called The Witness. Came out last week on PlayStation 4 and PC. So full verdict on that later on.
And we'll be very careful not to make puns about his name.
No, it's easy to do.
He's reaching for it, really.
He's reaching. Oh, my God. So, before we do that, though, into our little chat at the start, what are we playing at the moment? Now, I've been playing Resident Evil Zero and The Witness, so more on that when I do my reviews. But, Archer, what have you been playing lately?
Well, I finally got some new monitors for my PC.
Right.
So, I've been playing some PC games, namely Guild Wars 2.
Oh, my housemate, how good is that?
My housemate plays it, and I have had a copy for a number of years and never really got into it, but I thought, here we go. I have people to play with. It may be good.
Yeah.
Trying to get sucked into the MMORPG world, though.
Well, Guild Wars 2 is a good one to be sucked into.
I don't have
really
to pay
fun.
For it. That's the nice thing.
Well, that's the good part. The commitment's not there. But also, I love the dynamic quests that pop up. I love that things just happen in the world around you and you can just take part in them. It's not all about the quest markers. There's a bit of that. But
there is a bit of that. I like the art style.
It is beautiful.
It looks absolutely beautiful. Yeah. It's aged well, and like the 2D art style of all the menu systems and how they do graphics is just really pretty.
Yeah, nice. Yep. Now, Tom, what are you playing at the moment?
Well, I just got my hands on XCOM 2, so I've been jumping into that, but more on that next week.
Yes.
In the meantime, I've been finishing off Fallout 4.
Yep.
I've been actually picked up my copy of Pokemon Y again for the first time in forever in order to waste copious amounts of time on public transport.
Yeah. I really want to play Soul Silver again, but all the copies are like $80.
I know, right?
Yeah. I keep waiting for two copies.
Oh my God, I'll buy one off you.
Okay.
She's probably going to offer
just,
you for nothing.
No, just when are you out? Like, we'll just scrounge around and find it.
Or you can give it to me, whichever. I mean,
I should pay it. Be nice.
Make it rain.
Yeah, good nostalgia hit, the Pokemon.
Yeah, I kind of stopped because I got into that sort of breeding battling cycle that one can get into with Pokemon, and then...
Yeah.
Are you talking about your Friday nights again?
That's exactly.
Breeding battling cycle. It just happens all the time.
Yeah, I feel like there should be like a PSA announcement about now, just, you know,
some of those
the more
battles.
You know.
Some epic battles there.
But yeah, it's a great time eater. And so when you're sick, it's a great way to pass the hours by.
Yeah, definitely. Now Mix, now you in particular have had your paws on The Division last weekend, linking with our topic. They had their first public beta over the weekend, and you got your hands on a little copy of that. So, tell me, how is The Division? It's about a month away from release, so it's getting close now.
I am super excited, actually. I was excited before, but I was, you know, in that state of, okay, let's not, you know, fall for the hype. Let's calm down a little bit. We'll just see how it goes.
Don't do the Ubisoft thing. You know?
Yeah.
You had me whinging in your ear for like six months.
Yeah, maybe. and then I played it, and now I'm like super hyped again.
Well, from the hype online, I didn't even know it wasn't out for another month. I mean, it's all I've been seeing about. It's just
it
constant
is
talk about the Division release and beta.
Yeah, I mean, the beta was pretty small.
So what actually was playable in the beta? So was it like online multiplayer? Was it some missions? What actually was it?
All of the above. It was kind of like a little bit of everything, about. So the single player story missions, it was only about an hour long, maybe an hour.
It's a decent little demo.
Yeah. It's pretty good. Everything else was kind of online. So there was an online co-op mission that you could do. And then you got to go out into the Dark Zone, which was, it's kind of just an open world MMO kind of area.
Okay.
That you can run through and fight enemies, and I think there was a couple of little side missions in there as well.
Yeah.
That kind of pop up. But it wasn't very long and there wasn't a lot in there.
Can you also collect fat loots in that area?
Yeah, you can. But what was in the game, like in the beta, was actually really solid.
Yeah.
It was good. I didn't see any glitches except for like a few times where I couldn't open a door that it said I could open, and then I just stood there like juddering, and that was kind of funny. But then the door would open, and you know,
I don't know, a game without glitches, I'm like, are you even trying? I like Bethesda and Firaxis games, like it's not one of their titles if there aren't glitches.
This is true. So yeah, I.
So how does it play though? Like I had a chance to play the Division at PAX last year, and the EB Games Expo as well, and it was just a multiplayer mode that I got to play. The lineup for it was hours long.
Oh yeah.
So it's crazy, but the multiplayer, even in that environment, obviously being it was a LAN environment, of course, so it was it was pretty smooth playing it there. But the multiplayer was pretty fun. You know, I know that it's got a really meaty campaign to it as well, but even just that multiplayer, it was like a capturing zone type multiplayer that I played. It was pretty fun. Like the combat's good. Like it's it feels solid. I like the look of the game. It's very pretty.
It is. It's gorgeous. I think the most common thing we see these days for MMORPGs is, you know, fantasy settings.
Yeah.
So this is really cool where it's kind of like modern futuristic setting. And yeah, I really like that. So it's kind of taken one of my favorite elements and one of my favorite like artistic style genres and just like mesh them together. Like,
yeah.
Yes.
Nice one.
So yeah, everything I played was pretty smooth. The cover base combat was really nice. Like I'm usually not a big fan of that.
Yeah.
Like I played Gears of War and I'm like, ugh. I hate this. This is boring. But
you can't speak ill of Gears of War when Luke's
I know.
No, you can speak ill of it. You just can't make name changes and be a jerk.
Like Gears of Snore. Yeah, we know. So anyway.
Well, you let her get away with it.
I was just using it as a reference. Like, gosh.
Whatever.
We're talking about what you said. Anyway, Meegs, go on.
Yeah, yeah. So the cover-based combat was really smooth and really well done.
Yeah.
And the loot system was good. I think the modding system for the weapons was a little bit confusing. Like, that's one of the main issues I have with MMOs is that the UI, especially when it comes to, like, items and item creation and all that kind of stuff, gets a little messy and confusing.
Yeah.
So I did find that, but after a while, after like an hour of playing it, I'm like, oh, this is how the menu works, right? Cool.
Yeah, I imagine, obviously, when you get the full game and you have that time to really tinker around with it and play with it, you're going to probably... It'll probably make a lot more sense in that context as well. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's obviously certain bits of the menus that was locked off was like not available in beta, and I'm like, yeah, okay, that's fine.
Cool. Well, I've heard they're doing a second beta for it later in the month because it was so successful. They're doing another beta for the Division later on in February before the launch, just to really make sure it's fine, I suppose. But I think, I mean, everyone's been talking about it over the last couple of weeks. Like, it's been all over social media, everyone raving about it and talking about it. So. Yeah, so looking good so far. You reckon it's going to be good when it comes out
on that? I think so. I mean, obviously, when other people get involved and you might get a couple of douchebag players and that might ruin it for some people. But
well, yeah, my first question that comes up is the public chat. Is there public chat? And if so, how terrible is it?
I have no idea, actually, to be honest. So, of course, that's going to put people off, I think, just because people. But if you have lots of friends to play with, like, it's the same reason why I play Destiny is with if I play with friends, it's so much better.
Yeah.
I'm playing it by myself, not really that interested in.
Yeah.
But with The Division, I ended with Destiny, I guess. There's a lot of single-player campaign stuff, but I was really invested in that story because, like, you have to build up your base and you have to go around and do stuff, so, like, unlock the med bay and all that kind of stuff. So, like, there is stuff that you see happening in the world that you're building. So,
cool. That's and it is being compared to Destiny as well as the next big MMO for consoles. So, coming out next month, we'll have our review and our verdict on The Division when it comes out. Very, very exciting. Thanks, Meeks.
No worries.
Now, before we get stuck into the news, going to switch it up a little bit today, get stuck into our first review. So, I'm going to be starting off with my review of Resident Evil Zero, the HD remake. Capcom continue to give us nostalgia hit after nostalgia hit by releasing games from generations ago in an effort to give older versions of their most popular franchises a fresh coat of paint and hopefully find them a new audience. Resident Evil Zero is the next to get this treatment after originally coming out on the GameCube back in 2002. While some elements do hold up alright, there are others that feel dated and serve more as a happy reminder of how far video games have come in the last 14 years. The storyline was never the strongest, even when Resident Evil Zero was first released, with some very cheesy one-liners and relatively forgettable characters, and this remains to be the case here, apart from a sequence in the opening taking place in the confines of a train. Using two characters with personalities of cardboard cutouts, you have to switch between them to utilise their skills, manage your inventory, and get them out of the tricky zombie-related situations. What works well with this HD remake is the way it looks while you're playing. The pre-rendered backgrounds still look fantastic with lots of detail, and the visual upgrade is nice, although I could have done without the slow opening doors and slow ascending of staircases that used to operate as loading screens. Nostalgic they may be, but nowadays they just break immersion. The cutscenes also haven't been upgraded with the same tender loving care and often look a bit blurry, which is a shame. The controls have also been given a bit of an upgrade, so they can easily move back and forth between the two characters, and it does make the game feel a lot less clunky than the original, although the static cameras do still sometimes obscure your view in a way that hinders progress rather than helps, even though it does still effectively add to the horror vibe when you can't quite see what's happening off screen. Inventory management is still a pain, and at times you'll spend a lot more time in that menu screen shuffling around objects than you will shooting zombies. It's another one of those older ideas that's meant to create tension, but in today's climate all it does is irritate. Nobody wants to have to leave items on the floor and then backtrack to collect them later. Can we just get on with the fun part of the game, please? While it's nice to go back and experience the game again as an adult, the impact is actually lost a little bit considering the HD remake of the original Resident Evil that released last year. The nostalgia and love I had for that game is almost unmatched and features memorable and exciting moments of exploring the mansion for the first time, the zombie dogs jumping through the windows, and more. Resident Evil Zero just doesn't have that same vibe. It definitely feels like Resident Evil, but I would have much rather see a remastered HD version of Resident Evil 2, Code Veronica, or my absolute favourite, Resident Evil 3 Nemesis. The bonus unlock of being able to play as supervillain Wesker when playing through a second time is a nice touch and a cute idea, but ultimately it's a hollow addition. Resident Evil Zero is a fine game. It just hasn't aged that gracefully over the years. It really can't match more recent efforts in the horror genre that has had a real boom lately. Still, if you're craving something with an old-school survival horror style and want to reminisce about the old days, it could be worth the value given it is bundled with the original in the Origins collection. But, much like you'd approach the groaning zombie sound behind the door you're about to enter, I'd recommend that you approach this one very cautiously.
Yay, Resident Evil and remasters.
Lots of remakes. It's the Capcom business model at the moment.
It's everyone's just business model at the moment.
More Capcom. Like Devil May Cry last year, Resident Evil. They're just doing it. I'm sort of craving some new Resident Evil content at this stage.
I'm probably more on the one I'm most unhappy about with all these remasters, probably Activision, because they pumped out bloody Prototype. And that was the laziest remastering I've ever seen.
It was barely even a remaster.
No, I wouldn't even
call
it. It was
like, here's the game again.
Yes, yeah, that's just what I thought it was. I thought it was just being released on a new system.
In places it performed worse on the 360. I'm like, God, oh, sorry, I'm running off on a tangent that's unrelated.
That's all right.
Sometimes you need that reminder just to remind us of where we've come from in gaming and what we put up with so that we can really appreciate the new games.
You are on Critical Hit on Joy 94.9, and without further ado, it is time for the news.
With the games industry changing so often, it can be hard to keep up.
That's why on Critical Hit, we deliver you the news that matters. Yes, we definitely do. And not a lot of massive news this week, to be honest, but a few little announcements happened that I'm pretty excited about. Now, the first one, I'm actually pumped, and I think, Tom, I saw you on social media getting a bit excited
about
this one as well.
Yes, because I missed it at PAX, so this was my great unveiling.
Well, it wasn't playable at PAX, unfortunately.
No, but the promotion and things.
Well, very exciting, though. Bethesda has revealed that Doom's release date is May 13th, available, of course, on the Xbox One, PS4, and PC simultaneously. They also announced a premium collector's edition, which I'm mentioning because the statue looks amazing.
I'm getting it. Like, I don't even care how much. Take my money. Just give it to
me. It's a 12-inch statue of a revenant demon, modeled from actual in-game 3D files, and has an LED-lit base. It's just, I want it. I want it now.
How about you, Archer? You love some dust collectors.
Sometimes I do, but I want to use this as a minor segue to discuss something that happened at RTX, which I didn't get a chance to because I was ill. Well, Doom had like a boothy thing in RTX.
A boothy thing?
Yeah, big
technical term.
Big Bethesda Doom boothy thing. It was a lounge and it was absolutely horrible. I don't know why it existed.
Oh.
Yeah, well, just had some beanbags and nothing to do and you could buy some drinks and then get really hot and then leave.
Fair enough.
Were the drinks at least like on theme?
No. You reckon they could make up some Doom-themed cocktail names, but no, didn't even try.
Well, we'll talk more about your weekend at RTX later in the show.
I just wanted to get it in there.
Fair enough. You usually do. Now, Doom. Now, I'm excited about this. Now, when they first showed the gameplay trailer of Doom at E3 last year, I think that was really kind of like, yes, this is the Doom we've been wanting.
Absolutely.
Since, like, the first one. Like, this is perfect. I mean, it looks fast-paced, violent as all hell, running through, these giant monsters are coming at you, but you don't care, you just blow them apart and crush their skull. It just looks that really fun thing yes, that shooters don't do anymore.
I think there's a slight cheesiness to us that really sells, because when they did the first remake that I can't remember who developed it these days, it came across more like Fear or one of those sorts of games that was just Twitch shooter rather than horror. The actual theme of Doom, which is, you know, it's a hot mess and it's wonderful.
Yeah, and Doom is not meant to be about slow burning horror. It's meant to be like in your face, like crazy, just intense. It's meant to be intense. You're meant to have your heart pumping the whole time. That's what Doom was for me as a kid. And that's the vibe this one gives out. And I'm just very happy. We knew it was coming out sometime in the first half of the year, but it is very nice to get a confirmed release date of May 13th. Bethesda are also pretty good with their release dates. They don't tend to delay things. They know when it's ready and they do it. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Which console is people getting it on?
I'm still a console boy, so I'll probably do...
But
some
PS4.
Of us don't have them all. I will get it on my console. Full stop.
Xbox. The asynchronous Xbox. Analog sticks are better for shooters.
Well, yes, I'm sort of more thinking about how they're going to have the whole create your own levels thing.
That's going to be cool.
Yeah, I feel like for me, I feel more comfortable with that running on the Xbox Live servers. I don't know. I just feel a bit more confident in those online.
That or if it goes through, say, like the Steam Workshop, like they've been doing with some of the other new games recently.
Yeah, but see, it's a shooter, though, so I'm leaning towards PC.
Okay, fair enough.
Over trying to keep my stats of my system up to spec.
My game is
consoles
cool.
work.
Yeah, but by that time, I should have like my gaming PC like updated and just like full on raring to go. So
yeah, fair enough.
The famous catch call of the gamer.
By this time, this should happen. Yeah. Quote unquote.
Yeah.
Famous last words.
Need a new graphics card or something. But Doom, it looks amazing. I'm very excited about it. I'm very, very keen on that one. So Doom, May 13th. Put it in your calendars. Book your annual leave at work. Make it happen.
So I'm not going to be available May 13th.
Yeah, sorry, I'm sick that day.
That's next week, exactly. There we go.
Couple more things. Well, in 4 months.
Oh, May,
time.
Sorry, yeah. What's wrong with me?
Next week?
I'm still sick.
I would be losing my mind if it was 13th, next week.
The 13th of February. Oh, God.
I wouldn't be here.
I'm just going to stop.
Some more news for you. Now, this is one I want to skip ahead to. It's a Kickstarter one, Archer, so I thought you'd appreciate it. A game is on Kickstarter, getting some extra funding. It's called Battalion 1944. It is from Bulkhead Interactive, who are massive fans of the original Call of Duty and Medal of Honor titles, and they're bringing back the World War II first-person shooter.
Ugh.
So going back to that style of older weapons and that environment and stuff, and they're pretty excited about it. They're actually saying they're actually talking about stripping back and stripping out unbalanced unlocks, overpowered abilities, and just trying to reinstate the fun and the skill of the game, which I thought was a shot at all modern shooters, which was interesting.
Up until 6 months ago, I didn't know that wasn't a thing. I thought there was still all those like Medal of Honor and World War II sort of esque shooters.
Not really.
I didn't realize that was done after about 2002.
What I want to know is why in World War II would we always just do the same battle over and over again? It's always like in like Central Europe, but World War II was an entire planetary thing. You can have battles all over the place, but no one's done that.
Normandy Beach.
All the time.
That was great in Medal of Honor, though.
Yes, it was.
That scene. When I was a kid, playing Medal of Honor with that beach scene, oh my God, that was amazing. Like, it blew my mind. It was so good.
The thing that legitimized shooters for me. Yeah,
just really, really well done even back then. But also, I don't know if I want another World War II shooter. That means you're probably like me. You groaned, right?
Hate World War I, World War II shooters.
Why?
I'm so over it. I just hate that whole environment. Like, I know it's part of history and that's all well and good, but... Yeah. You know, when it comes to video games, I want something a little bit out of the ordinary. And going backwards in time to, you know, World War II, and like that seems so close.
Unlike
and
I'm all just the like, medieval stuff that's
far
love
away.
To jump on.
That's completely far away, and that's more fantasy-esque kind of stuff generally. So going back to like modern times, I guess I'm over it.
So
there's nothing about that time period that I like.
So you like something when no one is still alive that can say that didn't happen. So with the World War II ones, you've got people who are still, you know, they were in the war and they can say how it is. But with medieval, you can make up whatever you want because you don't know, you weren't there.
Well, the rules. Not quite.
I don't think dragons ever actually existed.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
What? I think for me, it's about the rules of games nowadays. And when I say rules, I mean that you know, I've played games like Titanfall and Advanced Warfare. I know Call of Duty, it cops it almost unfairly nowadays from, you know, real hardcore gamers. But, I mean, those games as shooters provided some really cool technology like jetpacks, so you can jump from building to building and run across walls and jump into giant, you know, in Titanfall you can jump into these big robots and have mechs and have mech fighting, and, you know, in Evolve you've got a giant monster running around and you can trap them with trapping guns and stuff like that. Sounds brilliant. No. a little bit. But no, but I mean, it provides all these fantasy, modern, futuristic elements that really enhance the gameplay for me. And the idea of going back to a game that's World War II based, where it won't have any of that based on the realism of the actual game, which might be fantastic, but it just, to me, it sounds like it's going to be a bit boring compared to all of that other stuff that I've played.
I'm 100% with you.
Yeah.
Like, it does not seem interesting to me at all.
As you were reading it out and they said, oh, look at all the fun stuff we're removing, we're going to make it more fun, I was like,
what?
What's happening? But also, I'd like to call you out on the fact that you mentioned a Kickstarter thing, baited me, and then didn't mention that whole ant simulator thing that went up in flames this week.
Well, you can explain ant simulator.
Okay, there was an ant simulator thing that went on Kickstarter.
Like the old bullfrog one from back in the day.
You play as an ant.
Okay.
It's an ant simulator.
So it's like Goat Simulator, but ants.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't look much into it. All I know is that the developers blew all their Kickstarter money on booze and strippers.
Of course they did.
And so the project's been cancelled.
That's one thing.
Oh, is it one thing?
That's the majesty of Kickstarter, is my understanding.
Oh, God.
These are development costs?
I didn't want to talk about it, Archer, because you're just... You just love it too much.
You started it. You mentioned me. You were like, oh, look at all this Kickstarter music. I thought you were going to bring it up yourself, but nah.
I would never bait you.
You want to pretend that Kickstarter doesn't have problems.
I would never bait you, Archer. I'd never do that. Now, last bit of news
today. You're a master beta.
You're terrible. Last bit of news today is H1Z1. It's a PC zombie survival game. It's being split into two separate games. They are making one called Just Survive, with focus on open world survival, more of a single player type thing. And also doing a King of the Hill H1Z1, which is more of a fast paced shooter. They're both going to be available to purchase separately from February 16th on Early Access. And King of the Hill can be released on Xbox and PlayStation 4 in mid-2016. Now, I haven't got on board any of these online survival-y zombie shooter things on PC.
This is weird, because H1Z1 was doing well. And so they've taken some fairly new IP and split it into Left 4 Dead and Dying Light.
Well, they've said that it's what the fans wanted, but I don't...
Because those things already exist, and so it's easy to point to them.
Yeah.
H1Z1 was doing well.
Oh, my God, you're so on point with that. People don't know what they want. Again, this is an issue with Kickstarter. Until they have it, they just want what they've already seen.
Yes.
And they're like, oh, these things will be cool. Let's just do the same thing over and over again. However,
what I'm reading between the lines of this
is like, oh, development costs a bit more than we thought it would, so we're going to release two games on the same engine with the same stuff.
Now, at least if you already own H1Z1, you'll automatically have both. Like, you don't have to rebuy anything. So that's one thing about it. I'm like, well, that's okay. But, I mean, everybody else is going to have to buy both, I guess.
I've never heard of it before.
I have.
Yeah, I've heard of it, but it's in the same category as, what's that one everyone plays on online that everyone raves about,
DayZ.
DayZ, thank you.
There was about three of them that all came out all around the same time, yeah.
Yeah, well, DayZ is the one I hear all about, you know, and how you can play it for 5 minutes, get all your stuff stolen, you're dead, and that's a great gameplay.
And that's life. It's life.
Yeah,
it's realistic damage.
Riveting.
Yeah, look, not my thing, but hey, if it comes to console, I might give it a go. Like, you know, I haven't played it because of the PC limitations and my lack of a good PC, so, I mean, you know, it's coming to console, that's good. Not sure about the split thing, though.
No.
Sounds it's weird. Yeah. Like
strange marketing.
If you're bundling it in with the game that everyone's bought anyway, why even do it? I don't understand. They can do whatever they want. That's their game.
Coming back shortly, guys. We're going to be talking about the topic of the week, which is beta testing, and whether we think it's a good thing, a bad thing, or just a marketing ploy. You're on Critical Hit on Joy 94.9, and I'm going to go into the next review for the day. It is my review of the new puzzle game on PlayStation 4 and PC. It's called The Witness. The Witness has engaged me in a way that I haven't experienced in a long time. I should have expected nothing less from the very anticipated puzzle game from the creator of Braid. However, From the moment you load up the game and encounter your first challenge, the style gripped me instantly and didn't let me go. Exploring the beautiful and strange island and testing my wit felt like learning another language so that I too was able to communicate in this world. And as I tackled each new area and style of puzzle, the feeling of being out of my depth was eventually replaced with one of pure glee and accomplishment. It's a feeling that video games don't often achieve, and the fact that it happens so often here is a testament to its incredibly smart game design. Essentially, The Witness is a number of labyrinth-like puzzles that must be completed by moving a line from the indicated starting point on a panel to reach the exit point. It sounds simple, and perhaps it is in the beginning, but then more elements are introduced to change the way you must complete each consecutive panel, ensuring you hit certain points without crossing over the same path, separating black and white dots, and figuring out what each pattern means is part of the fun. And each area of the colourful and beautiful island has a different theme and a different language that must be learned to be able to complete it. Completing a puzzle panel leads to another one via a circuit that must be followed, or it may unlock a door or activate a lift. With no verbal or written instructions, learning is entirely visual and will cause you to think differently when trying to apply logic to something that initially seems illogical. The motivation behind completing each section is simple but intriguing. Once you've solved an area, a beam of light shoots from where you are towards the top of a mountain, and as you progress, more and more beams shoot towards the ominous endpoint and raise questions about what happened on the island and what does it all mean. Piecing it together certainly is intriguing and provides a sort of finish line for those who need it, but honestly, my time spent exploring was enjoyable enough in the first place. There is a certain rhythm to completing area after area, and because everything is accessible from the start, you're free to tackle things in any order you wish, but there are puzzles you'll encounter as you explore that you quite literally won't understand. This is where The Witness shows its intelligence rather than being outright frustrating. If you don't know how to solve a certain puzzle, you're not meant to know how to solve it yet. My one spoiler-free tip for playing the game is this. When you're trying to figure something out that you're clearly not supposed to understand, you will never be able to just figure it out with pure guesswork. Go for a walk through the game world and find something else to do instead. This suggestion is made even easier to digest when the island itself is so beautifully crafted, with bright colours and varied locations, like the gorgeous pink cherry blossoms, the vibrant green bamboo forest, and the vast golden desert with the sun beaming down brightly. The visuals help to define puzzle areas, but are more than just that. They're wonderfully crafted and genuinely pretty, and they're further enhanced by multiple different perspectives you get to enjoy them from when viewing from certain angles and higher vantage points. Some may look at a game like The Witness and call it pretentious or weird for the sake of weird, but I was so captivated by everything I was doing that none of those negative thoughts really crossed my mind throughout my playthrough. There's also quite a lot of content here if you're willing to take the time. I'd estimate a solid 20 to 30 hours just to finish the main areas on the island, but there are other secrets to discover and optional puzzles to complete as well, which further enhances what is already a deeply complex and thoughtful experience. When you encounter puzzles late in the game that take advantage of several different rules that you've learned and want you to apply them all as a combination, it's super satisfying to complete these puzzles and reflect on the beginning where you are merely drawing a straight line from one end of a maze to another. Look at how far you've come, and look at what you've achieved. This game came in hotly anticipated by many, and even though I was looking forward to its eventual release, I didn't expect for it to captivate me as much as it has. Walking through the real world feels dull for me at the moment, it lacking the gorgeous colour palette and engrossing conundrums that propel The Witness to the forefront of my thoughts on a constant basis. After all of the hours I've invested, I still want to go back and discover more. The elegance of its overall presentation, from the bright visuals to the minimalistic audio, is just so delicately crafted. This could have just been a game about exploring a mysterious island, and it could have just been a game about solving intense, smart, and mind-bending puzzles. But luckily for all of us, it's both of those things at the same time, and is an easy recommendation as the first truly must-have game of 2016.
That's a bold call.
It's really good, you guys.
Yes, it sounds like a sort of higher level of gaming.
It looks absolutely beautiful, and I'm really looking forward to playing it.
Yeah,
that's right, listeners. I'm looking forward to playing something. It's not just hatred spewing from this mouth.
Look, The Witness, I knew it would be like good puzzles and stuff, but when I actually started playing it, I was just like, wow, this is actually seriously, seriously good. I couldn't stop. I still want to go back and play it more. I've played it all week. I'm driving my partner completely insane because all I'm doing is playing The Witness and solving these puzzles. And also, side note, it's the kind of game where if you have someone next to you watching, they can kind of help you try and figure it out too, because their perspective might actually see something that you don't, which is quite cool.
I get the feeling from the way you've described it as well that it's a game that you can come back and forth to if you aren't completely hooked in that, like, my life no longer exists kind of way.
Yeah.
It's not a game where you just have to be like, oh, what happened in the previous scene? What do I have to do? Where was I on the way to? Like, being a puzzler, it's a bit more straight line.
Yeah, and it's good. It does start off quite simple, but then later on in the game, it is like, are you serious? You want me to do that? But you figure it out because the game really cleverly teaches you how to do things and how to communicate with it. So, yeah, no, it's very, very cool. Make sure you check it out, The Witness. It's available now on PlayStation 4 and PC, and apparently potentially coming out on iOS, Android, and Xbox later on down the track as well, they've said this week. So definitely either way, however you play it, definitely check it out.
Nice.
Now, Archer, you were up at RTX last weekend, the Rooster Teeth Expo.
I was up at RTX last weekend.
Had a little panel too, didn't you?
Yeah, so I was up there on behalf of Critical Hit, taking a look around, looking at things, but I was also on the Diversity in Games panel as a speaker. Spoke about diversity in games. How about that?
Shock.
I don't know, shock horror. That was good fun. That was good fun. Very enjoyable.
Yeah. How was the expo? How was it?
Very, 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 very humid. And it did need that many varies. Like, oh, God, it was so humid.
Ah, Sydney.
Just the space as well. It's like, oh, look at that. There's a single air conditioner that's funneling all the hot air back into the room. Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I'm having a really hard time getting past that.
Flashbacks.
There was a number of indie games all on presentation from around the country, which is great. Saw a number of ones I liked. There was one about a salmon going up a stream. You had to bounce it to collect all the stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was called exactly.
Salmon bounce.
Something about a salmon.
Salmon bounce.
I think I remember the developer's
bouncing
name.
Salmon.
It's called Beartooth.
Bouncing salmon.
Bounce Bear salmon. Tooth
well, now, Rooster Teeth is one of those names that you hear around, but I'm never actually...
So what is it?
Oh, Rooster Teeth. Rooster Teeth. Okay, so they are a channel / publishing / thing on YouTube. They make a lot of videos. So they did Red versus Blue. That was their first big thing.
Yes, I suppose that would be the name that I know it from.
Yeah, yeah, so the crew also do a lot of other shows and podcasts, and they do Ruby and a ton of other things. And so it's all about that. So people who are huge into Red versus Blue and any of the other stuff that Rooster Teeth do, they go there, they get merch and talk to the people who are on it and watch the panels that they do.
Yeah, there's panels, some games, some things. Yeah.
Well, so they have a lot of merch as well, though. I've been noticing around it, you know, with all the gaming tees and stuff like that. I keep seeing all this Rooster Teeth stuff. I'm like, is there something big that I'm missing here?
They're because pretty popular.
I haven't sort of clicked in.
So it's like a cult.
Yes.
It's cult-esque.
In a good way.
It's cult-esque. Yeah, so it was reasonable. It wasn't that big.
Yeah.
And it definitely showed that it was their first time running such a thing in Australia or in that particular
venue.
We
had a few in the US, so this was the first time in Australia, which is cool.
Yes.
Now, something else that's been in the US but's coming to Australia later in the month.
Yes, that would be GX Australia. So, short for Gamer X, well, that's what it's related to in the US. It's a LGBT gaming exhibition, so just not so much just for the LGBT, but just
all-inclusive.
Make it friendly, all-inclusive.
Friendly
so
space.
It's GX Australia, Everyone Games is the subtitle, so just making sure everyone's there and having a great time.
Yeah, make sure you check it out on social media and get involved. Me and Archer are going to be there.
Yeah, we are going to be there. It's being hosted up in Sydney, in fact, in the same spot that Rooster Teeth Expo was, if
you
went there. Yeah, should be great fun. Tickets are on sale now.
Cool. Check it out, GX Australia. Support the LGBT all-inclusive fun video games expo.
And the Australian gaming community in general.
Yeah. Good to have one, a couple of things at the start of the year rather than all being at the back of the year like it usually is with EB and the PAX as well. So check it out. Now, guys, back in a second, we're going to be talking about beta testing in video games, what we think of it.
You're on Critical Hit on Joy 94.9. And just so you know, that salmon bouncing game is called Super Salmon Migration.
Yeah.
Which is name. I love that.
Yeah.
I do.
I love the studio, though. They're called Beartooth. Look how cute their logo is.
I'm genuinely going to buy all their games just based on that name. So thank you. Now, Super Salmon Migration. talking about beta testing. Mace, stop it. You're killing me.
Sorry.
You're dying.
Now, beta tests, for those who don't know, are... Tests of games
in beta.
They're online tests where people can play video games, usually a few months before they've come out, to give it a go. And the idea of it from a publisher-developer perspective is supposedly to test the servers, to stress test the amount of people that are playing it, to make sure it runs okay, that sort of thing, and also get feedback from the players so they can incorporate it into the game to make improvements before release.
For those outside the lingo, beta just is usually... pre-release.
So pre-release test.
It's the build of the software before it's being pushed out to everyone.
Yes, but my understanding is that it's mainly based around glitches and that the actual base content is there, as opposed to, say, Alphas, where you may get something actually added to it that's substantial rather than fixing.
Beta release, all the actual content of the game or the software or whatever it is should be there and locked in, and they're just trying to minimize any glitches or like weird things that happen with the servers being full of people.
Yeah, because as much as you can test it in offices and with a group of people working on the game, you never quite know what's going to happen until you put it out there to the world and then see what variables other people come up with, other connections and countries and things like that. So
how it goes with Australian internet latencies, all that.
Well, that's one thing I want to start on, actually, because, I mean, with Australia, like, our internet is awful.
Australia.
It's the worst.
We're not getting the NBN anymore.
And these beta tests, I found some of them have been really hard just to take part in because of the server being so terrible and the lack of games available for other people playing.
Fable Legends, I've never got a game.
I would also like to point out that it's not just a beta issue, it's an online issue at all. Like, I've had, when we were playing, when Siege came
Rainbow
out.
Rainbow Six, yeah.
Yeah, it took me 2 days to get a game.
But I find it's worse with betas because there's less people in the pool in the first place. You know what I mean? At least with the full retail release, it's got a certain number of sales behind it. So you can find a game sometimes. But with betas, I find often, I feel like I'm the only one in Australia playing it, and I'm waiting for a game for hours, and I get a game, and then it's laggy and terrible, and I'm dead before I can even do anything, and it's certainly not a good selling point. Like, I'm playing this game, and I'm really hating it based on things that are outside of what the game actually is. It's like connection issues and lag and stuff like that, but I'm instantly going, this is terrible, I don't want to play this anymore.
Yeah, I think that's why they generally steer away from launching stuff in Australia. Like, it's only now that we're seeing more betas here, but in the States and stuff, they've been getting them for longer.
Well, because I've played a few betas of single player games as well, and I find that even if I don't have that really negative reaction, it's a little bit like watching a dress rehearsal of a play. Like, okay, it's fine and all, but when you're then watching the real thing or playing the real thing, you still remember, oh, that's that point where that stuffed up, and oh, yeah, they've added this in now. Like, you tend to remember your first sort of experience or presentation of it.
You always remember your first.
True.
Exactly.
However, just on that, though, the people going into a beta are the diehards. This isn't released to everyone.
But
so
you're right.
You're going to corrupt some people's first impressions of it, but these are the people who really want to get in there as fast as possible.
I mean, sometimes it also can be a really good opportunity to demo a game that people aren't sold on. Like, for me, I know we talk crap about Destiny a lot because I don't think it's that great. I know now it's improved a lot, but when it was out, I didn't think it was that great. But I was sort of umming and ahhing about Destiny, and then they had the open beta. I played the beta, and I went as far as I could with the level cap. I played the hell out of it. I loved it. As a beta, it sold me on the game. I was super hyped. I was excited. I bought into it because the beta was so solid with minimal issues. The connection was great. There were people playing it. The gameplay was solid. And it was only, like, yeah, granted, a snippet of the game with a few raids or whatever they call them in Destiny. But it's the reason why I bought the game. The beta was so strong. So in that sense, it really actually sold it for me. When before that, I was kind of, oh, is it going to work?
Yeah.
So it can have that effect as well. And now with Siege, Mies, this is what spawned this, because you played the Siege beta. And you
said,
beta testing, you know, is it just marketing?
Yeah. I played so much of the beta and I really enjoyed it. It kind of got to the point where I'm like, this seems pretty solid. Like, there wasn't much more added on release. Like, there just wasn't.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like, well, if it's already this solid, is it really something that you need testing? I'm like, yeah, sure, there'll probably be those benefits, but is that the main reason for it? And I think that nowadays, especially with Greenlight and stuff like that, that it's mostly marketing.
Greenlight makes me vomit, but... Sorry, I've lost my segue. I think there's a big difference between a closed beta and an open beta.
Yes.
So a closed beta, you get a lot of the stress testing because it can allow as many people as you want to try and properly. It'll be the people who applied for it and the people that you have selected for it. And you have all these things that are great for testing.
Yes,
an open beta, I feel, is so much more about just letting people try it and more marketing.
Like a demo. I don't know about that. I mean, yeah, you've got, yes, Your arguments are valid, yes. But also the fact that if it's a closed beta, it's exclusive. And yes. that makes everybody want it. And I'm sorry, but you're going to have to be really hard-pressed to convince me that marketing doesn't know that strategy. So
I got a invite to do the Division beta on Xbox Live, and I was like, eh.
Yeah, but you're on the game.
I know, but like, I didn't feel exclusive. To me, it didn't feel exclusive. It was just like, oh, there's a beta. I can try the game before it's finished.
Well, that's one example, but it can certainly feel exclusive, though.
And with that, I suppose, as you're saying, the hardcore fans who are really going to chase after that beta access. With some titles where I know there's been a beta out there, by the time it's open for general release, the diehard fans have already got their system down. They've practiced it out. They know exactly what they're doing with the game and the layout of the maps and everything. And I can find it can be a little withholding when you're trying to jump into these games. You just get pawned instantly because they've had, you know, a month's access, or even if it's just a week or two and they just don't do anything else but play it.
It definitely needs to be timed, like, yes. for a weekend. I like the whole idea of a weekend beta that a few publishers have been doing.
I do, but I also hate it because, you know, I have a life and everyone has lives, and it's hard sometimes
Well, then you're not the target.
But I would have loved to play The Division. Like, when the code came through, I was like, yes, The Division. Then I was like, oh, this weekend? I don't have a lot of time this weekend. And that's why I was like, damn, I can't really play it this weekend, you know? And unfortunately, because the American timing of it as well, so it started like 11 p.m. on Friday night for us and finished on Monday afternoon, whilst, you know, in the U.S. they would go like Friday morning. So I could have gotten home from work on Friday and actually played it, because it was that U.S. weekend. I didn't get that opportunity, and it put me off that particular beta. And that happens a lot, where it's over those days where it's not convenient for me. And that's why I wish it was at least a week, like at least a little bit longer, like maybe a week or two to really give it a crack.
Wasn't Destiny that long? Wasn't Destiny like a week?
Destiny, I think it was, had two. Yeah. They released an alpha and a beta.
Yep, yeah. I played both.
Playing the alpha.
Yeah.
Now, what do we think about, because guys, I mean, we're talking about, you know, betas for testing and stuff like that, but it's used as a sales pitch as well for many games, in the sense that, you know, pre-order now to get access to the beta, or if you buy this other game from this publisher, then it'll get you access to the beta of this really hotly anticipated game that you want to play.
I hate it.
Yeah, I'm not into it either.
Like, because we're saying it's for testing and stuff, but they're using it as a, you want to play, you know, Gears of War 4 beta, right?
Oh,
but you've got to buy the Gears of War Ultimate Edition, which is the remaster of the older Gears of Wars, and that will give you access to the beta. But that's the only way you can access it, is by having this game.
This is them just pretending it's a beta. At that point, it's a demo. That is exactly a demo. If you're getting early access to a game with a pre-order or something else, you are getting a demo.
Yeah.
You're being presented a demo and that's it. This is why I prefer the model of EA Access, where you have the sub and you get all the bonuses, but you also have free access 8 days before a new release of EA titles. That, for a number of games, has made me decide to purchase the game because I had this demo.
And do you think, though, that if you said to someone, if you buy this game this year, I will give you access to the beta for Gears of War 4 in this example, right? Is that better and sound? Does that sound better than saying, if you pre-order this game, you'll get a demo of Gears of War 4? You know, is beta now a thing where people go, ooh, the beta, I'm special.
Yes, it does
now
sound a little more high-end.
I'm a developer.
I don't think it's high-end, but I would say I don't think high-end's the right word. I think elitist is probably closer to it, because they think they're in an exclusive group of, look how special I am, I can test it before it's ready.
And people do brag about it,
but it also speaks to being a higher quality of gamer, in that, like, you know, I am important. I am giving real feedback here. There's a pretension that comes with it.
By definition, the beta should be not as finished as a demo. A demo is a build specifically made for demonstration and should be as polished as the original game, but just
a small part
for that small portion. Like, oftentimes, builds that are going to conventions like PAX or anything like that, that's an entire build separate from the game being developed,
totally.
And that's just being developed for conventions and things for people to be looking at to make sure that looked great. And that should be what's being sold. But I'm pretty sure that is what is being presented, but they're just labeling it beta because that's the buzzword.
There's also the idea that they're just using the public to get free, like, QA on their games.
I'm okay with that.
I'm just like, oh, guys, like, you're trying to sell
someone
it to me.
Someone gets paid for this.
Yeah, somebody should be getting paid for this. Like, it's an actual job with actual bugs, and trying to find, you know, those little bits of lines of code and all that kind of stuff. it's a lot of work. It really is. And for them to be like, oh, but maybe we can just make people do it for free.
Actually,
but the point is people are doing it for free.
I know, but it kind of annoys me.
That's a very good point, and I think that's how I'm going to summarize my opinion of it. These betas that are being presented are not betas. You don't have to give feedback, and so it isn't a beta build. You are being presented a demo. If you got like something happened and you were presented with it, what were you doing? This is the log from what you happened at that time.
Right.
Do you have any information about what you were doing at the time?
Do any of them automate those statistics?
They most probably do in the back end. But if you're not actively able to present feedback on this build, then you're not a tester.
Yeah, they give you the option.
Assuming
like,
that it's user error that it, or user interaction that's causing the problem rather than just the code running.
They don't know, though.
Yeah.
They don't know, and that's what they should be trying to find out.
Part of testing is finding that out. So conversely, how Microsoft has their insider program, every time something happens, and even just when it isn't, when you're just using the computer, it'll prompt you saying, how was this? Please provide feedback.
Yeah.
Because you are testing it. That is an example of a test. Whereas these betas, they're presented as tests, but they're essentially finished.
See, the funny thing is I had a sort of opposite situation at PAX when we were there, where they had demo games, but I ended up breaking about three of them because they were basically in beta and I did something the developer wasn't expecting
a user
to do. Yes, primarily.
That will be the difference. They can't afford QA, so you are the QA.
You are the QA.
That's what friends are for.
Like, that sort of stuff,
I know, but they would have taken your feedback right there, what were you doing
absolutely,
at the time.
Yeah.
Exactly, that's what makes it a test. It is scientific. You have notes and what's happening and you can make changes based on the information provided.
True.
Whereas all they get from a public beta like these are back-end notes and hype.
Surely there's got to be a bit of online whinging.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think that is literally... I mean, do these betas make people more or less likely to invest in the game when it comes out?
More.
Depends.
Are you going to play the game, though, with a beta and maybe go, oh, you know what, this doesn't play very well, or this is... the online functionality is not great, I have a crap connection, maybe I'm not going to buy this? Because for me, Rainbow Six Siege, the beta turned me off it, to be honest, because I didn't get an experience that I enjoyed, and I thought, I'm not going to risk this.
Well as being a buzzword, the word beta also makes you more forgiving. So if you've got a demo and it was broken, then you'll be upset and you won't buy the game.
If you've got a beta
and it's broken, you'll be like, okay, well, it's just the beta.
It's the beta. It's not finished yet. It's just the beta.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly.
But there's a difference between a glitch and a break. I mean, if the game is proper breaking, then you need to go back to development. Like, that's a serious problem.
But you still kind of go, well, maybe it is.
But you'll forgive it because it's just a beta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's clever. Yeah, clever, isn't it?
But there's also the idea of, like, some betas I will play and they'll do something that I don't like and I'm like, I'm completely turned off by this game.
Yeah.
But
unless this is fixed, like on launch, like it won't stop me from buying it, but it will stop me from buying it on launch. And I think that's the difference. So if I play a beta and it's just like blah, I'm like, well, I'm not buying this on launch. I'm just going to wait.
If it's an online multiplayer game, though, if you don't buy it on launch, you've pretty much missed your window of gameplay.
That's not entirely true.
That's what ends up happening to me.
And that means the game shouldn't be sold at all. If it doesn't have a single player campaign, don't come to my door.
Yeah, I think there's
come a knocking.
No, don't come a knocking.
I think there's more forgiving.
This guy will not be a rocking.
More forgiveness in the online.
Yeah, I think nowadays, not so much before like old school vanilla WoW, but you know,
I don't know. I reckon games. I mean, look at the lifespan of things like Evolve and Titanfall and Battlefront. Even like it's not there anymore. Even Battlefront launched in November. Most of the community is like meh. I'm done.
You've got two or three game styles you can play. The rest do
and
not
the Division
exist.
Might be huge, but then Gears of War 6 months away. So, I mean, you've got to wonder the lifespans when there's so many games coming out nowadays. Do betas actually really help or hinder? You know what I mean?
Are they cannibalizing their own lifespan?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
We've got to wrap it up, guys. All the time we have for today.
Can I interject?
Really quickly.
Okay. When you got turned off the Rainbow Six Siege, was it because of the gameplay that you didn't like, or were there bugs that broke it for you?
There's the connection issues. I feared the Australian connection to that game.
Okay,
and then
there you go.
The fears were a bit true because Meeks couldn't even play it for like 2 weeks when we got it.
So it would be broken in a demo as well.
Yeah, there you go.
All
right, thanks guys. Archer, Meeks, Tom, thanks for joining me today.
Nice. As always.
Thank you, Luke.
Keep on listening to Joy.
Glad to be back.
Yeah, welcome back. Keep listening to Joy 94.9, and we're going to end with some Division soundtrack as well for you. This has been Critical Hit on Joy 94.9.
This has been a Joycast of Critical Hit for Joy 94.9. If you like this podcast, please rate us on iTunes and Stitcher. Achievement unlocked.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.